So my name is Jill Bushakra. I'm a postdoc with the USDA in Corvallis with Nahala Basile and Chad Finn working on this enormous black raspberry project. Today I'm going to be speaking to you about some marker development that we're doing for aphid resistance in black raspberry that we hope will then translate into red raspberry. And before I get started, even though I'm kind of the face of the project, I have all of these people backing me up and helping me. It is a multinational, multi-institutional, multi-departmental project that I just happened to be able to give you the presentations, and I'm really grateful to be able to work on this project. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about black raspberry, some about the aphid that is the issue for us. The virus complex that the aphid transmits, our sources of aphid resistance, how we approached identifying some loci associated with resistance, our preliminary results, and what we hope to do with this stuff. So Rubus occidentalis is a native to the United States, mainly to the eastern United States, and the blue shading on the map there shows you its native range. It's a high-value crop, especially in Oregon, but it's historically been grown in the Ohio River Valley and in New York. It's susceptible to a number of diseases, and it's got very low genetic diversity. And there's a history of inbreeding, again, because some things have been called different names of cultivars, but they're really genetically identical. And since the 1970s, there's only been a few cultivars released. And in contrast to red raspberry, where in the last 20 years, there's been close to 200 releases, and in blackberry, there's been around 75, we've had, less than a handful. But there's interest in developing new cultivars because they're one of these super fruits. They're super high in antioxidants, and they're super high in polyphenolics. And there's been a lot of work done on different components of the fruit having an effect on reduction in cancer cell proliferation in a couple of different kinds of cancers. So the difficulties that are encountered by growers, especially in Oregon, where most of the production is, and they're grown mainly for processing, is that the aphids are vectors of viruses. And it's not just one virus or two viruses, it's this big complex of viruses. And they also are susceptible to verticillium wilt. And so one of the issues is that we have a low genetic diversity, and that's not just within the cultivated varieties, it's among the entire species. The whole species is self-compatible, which in rosaceae, what? Who's self-compatible in rosaceae, right? These guys self really well. And so the fields get infected with the virus complex, and you're looking at a complete decline of the field within just a few years. Now this field is infected with verticillium, but this is pretty much what it looks like when it's infected with a virus as well. It's just the plants just decline in vigor and they lose fruiting. And so every 3 to 4 season, if a grower wants to grow black raspberries, then they have to replace their fields. And of course, that's a huge cost. So today I'm going to talk about the Amphorophora agathonica, which I'm just going to call large raspberry aphid. It ranges throughout North America and Canada, and it's this little tiny, it's a very elegant looking aphid. It's not one of those big kind of beefy aphids. It's really little. It's got these really long legs and antennae. It's kind of, sort of a ballerina sort of look. And it's not associated with ants, so it doesn't have that honeydew mess that other aphids do. Mm-hmm. There are 6 known biotypes that were identified by Michael Dossett and Heim Kempler. And they're closely related to a non-virus transmitting Amphorophora rubitoxica. This is a life cycle, and this image is from some work that was done and is put out as a public extension presentation by Danny Lytle, who did a lot of work on how aphids actually penetrate and probe the black raspberries. So they overwinter, they hatch around bud break. There's asexual generations before forming wings, and the winged forms can then travel around your field or between fields. The winged forms arise around June to September, and the sexual forms lay eggs in October to overwinter. So the virus complex, this has been studied quite a bit by Bob Martin at the USDA in Corvallis, the plant pathologist. And the aphids feed on the raspberries and some native Rubus species, but don't seem to really colonize blackberry, or cultivated blackberry anyway. The virus complex is composed of some of these and probably other viruses. So the one that is most devastating to black raspberry is the black raspberry necrosis virus, which again is a complex of viruses. And the symptoms are your plants start to decline in vigor and the fruit quality goes down. So there's been some research in Rosaceae as a whole on aphid resistance. And so these are some examples in apple and pear. Apple and rosy leaf curling aphid, there's been a locus identified on linkage group 7 in apple. And apple and woolly apple aphid, there's been a couple of loci, two on linkage group 8 and one on linkage group 17. And then in pear, there's been a locus for resistance identified on linkage groups 9 and 17, which in apple and pear are they're ancient duplications of each other. So 9 and 17 are virtually the same in apple and pear. In Rubus, there's a European large raspberry aphid, which affects the red raspberry, Rubus aedeus. And there's been a locus mapped on Rubus linkage group 6, and that's following the naming by Bouchakra et al. Little plug. Another locus on linkage group 4. And then in the North American large raspberry aphids, there's these six biotypes that are identified with red raspberry. And I've just recently published a paper for a locus for resistance in black raspberry that is on Rubus linkage group 6. So one of the things that I thought was interesting when I was researching this was that there's a lot of ancestry between the Rubus genome and the apple and pear genome with respect to the loci, or respect to the chromosomes on which these loci for resistance are found. And so, for example, Rubus linkage group 6, which is where my locus is, shares homology or ancestry with apple and pear 9 and 17. Linkage group 2 in Rubus shares ancestry with pear and apple 8, and 7 shares ancestry with pear and apple 7. With all the work that's being done on this, there have been no genes that have been characterized that are associated with resistance. Just the loci have been identified. And then there's putative gene names, but no actual gene associated. So our goal for this project is to develop molecular markers to distinguish between different sources of aphid resistance in black raspberry and make these markers easy for breeders to use. So Michael Dossett and Chad Finn and others went out and identified sources of resistance and used these sources of resistance to create populations that are the ones that I'm using in this project. So the 4305 population is where the linkage map is the population in which the linkage map was developed, and it has a source of resistance from Ontario, Canada. And then we have two more populations, one with a resistance from Maine and the other with resistance from Michigan. So what we did is we screened the individuals of these populations with live aphids. We took aphids from a clean colony and inoculated them, each of the plants, with 3 aphids, and then went back and checked and then did re-inoculations if we found plants that didn't seem to have any aphids colonizing them, so we could just make sure that they really were resistant. It's easy to tell when an aphid is colonizing because the aphids just cover the plants, but it's a little harder to prove resistance. So we went an extra step to look at resistance. And then we took that data and constructed the genetic linkage map and placed the aphid resistance locus for the 4305 population. And this is just a pedigree of showing the sources of resistance and the crosses with the susceptibles. So Jewel is susceptible, this NC84 10-3 is susceptible, I believe, yes. And then Munger and Jewel were used in as grandparents as well. And this 3021-2 is also a susceptible parent. So our segregation ratios for 4305 were essentially 1-to-1 for resistant to susceptible. So initial results is this mapped here on linkage group 6, and it segregates. So we have a genome sequence that is assembled into scaffolds, about 2,200 scaffolds, and the aphid resistance locus co-segregated with scaffold 99. So I got the sequence of scaffold 99, and I also took the sequences for the scaffolds flanking, scaffold 684 and scaffold 525, and I looked for SSR loci that we could design markers for to screen to see if we could get a better, so if we could actually find a marker. So we did. Woohoo! So this is what we got from the first, this is actually the very first primer pair that we ran. And it segregated exactly like what I was just like, oh my gosh, this is so awesome. So this was on scaffold 525, and this is a picture of our gel. And so we have a Michigan source, a Michigan by Ontario. We have 3 of those. We have a Maine source, and Ontario by Maine. We've got the parents, the grandparents, and then we have a selection of progeny, either susceptible or resistant. And the really great thing is that this shows up with Michigan and Ontario sources. It doesn't show up in Maine. And it doesn't. There's a faint band in susceptibles, but there's a very strong band in resistance. So we thought, well, how can we clean this up and make this so it's more clear about who's susceptible and who's resistant? And by the way, this is with aphid biotype, either A or B. We are still figuring out which biotype we're working with. So what we did was we did an experiment to look at optimization of this marker, and if we increased the temperature, the annealing temperature from 57 to 62, we got much clearer results. So this marker, as is a nice gel-based marker that could be easy for breeders to use. And the other thing we're doing is we're putting in a positive control so that you can tell if the amplification actually worked or if it's really a negative, so that we're working on that right now. But this is really exciting because now we have a marker that can distinguish Michigan and Ontario from Maine. And if we combine that marker from the scaffold 525 with another marker, we can distinguish between Michigan and Ontario by the presence or absence of this peak here at 168. So our next steps are to improve the markers and make them easier to use, find map that region and see if we can narrow it down a bit, and also to find the source for Michigan, for Maine. We're still looking for that one, or the locus for that one. There's, you know, other things we want to do, evaluate more aphid biotypes, evaluate more populations, but this is, you know, very new. This is just a couple of months old, this data. These are all the references that I have cited in this. And these are all the people who are involved with this. And I have 20 seconds for questions. So if you have anything you want to ask me, please see me after.